Welcome to the Go Hack Something podcast, where education and technologies meet. I'm your host, Will Bushy, author of Wired for Coding, and with me always is Ross Wickman. How are you doing today, Ross?
I'm doing perfect. I'm excited to get going talking about technology and hacking on this podcast, and had a good day and ready to get going.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I thought what we would talk about today is when should kids learn to program? And the reason I thought about that was in this week alone, today's Thursday, I've talked to preschool kids, I've talked to elementary school kids, I've talked to middle school kids, and I talked to high school kids today as well. And I was really surprised, and they're all related to technology. I was invited to come in and talk a little bit about technology to a preschool, which I've never actually done before. I forgot how anxious and excited four-year-olds can be about cool technology. And I was, like I said, I've never really talked to a preschool group before, and it was just kind of fun to see their excitement about things. What I did was I talked a little bit about some of our gaming boot camps. So I explained how we showed kids how to build video games. And I had a video, about a 10-minute video that we just looped that I played in the background of some of the games that have been created over the last couple of years. And they just thought that was super cool. But, you know, in all honesty, they were really cool that we could project something on the wall. So the bar was pretty low.
I suppose it was. It's still pretty great that you can take something and get that sort of interest from such young individuals. I remember in high school, my first introduction to programming and coding was a Visual Studio course in, I'm pretty sure it was eighth grade. It was the first time it was even introduced, the first time I even thought of it. So getting started that much younger, that's a perfect opportunity to really get good at development.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't teach these preschool kids anything. I was just explaining things to them, but they just got excited and they got to see what kids about, I don't know, roughly 4 or 5 years older than them could do. And then later, or actually it was earlier in the week on Monday, we had one of our coding clubs. So I got to hang out with about a dozen fourth and fifth grade kids. And there we're in about our third week. So we're showing them, they've already kind of learned a little tiny bit of the basics, but today this week we're working on some eight direction games and we're trying to expand out on them. And here, you know, these are kids that have literally had 3 hours worth of programming experience with the platform that we're using. And I was just really amazed at what they were able to do. And a lot of them were just jumping ahead and anticipating how to do things all on their own that we haven't even covered yet. And then today I stopped by my kids' high school. They had a project that my daughter was doing and they invite the parents to come in. And it was really cool because it had nothing to do with programming or computer science or development or anything. What they did is they had a project they had to work on. And if you remember from when you were in high school, usually that meant a poster board and you would tape things on it. Well, nowadays, because all the kids have Chromebooks and they've got access to a lot more technology, these kids go way, way, way beyond that. And so about half of the groups, they had actually built a web page for their project that they were presenting. And there was three or four of them that actually had an animated video that they created. Now, they were using some platforms to do it. They didn't hand draw the images. But still, I was really impressed. I kept thinking about it. And I work a lot with entrepreneurs, and a lot of times they can't even get a basic website up and running to sell their product. And here we've got some, these are freshman kids building a web page just for a school project. So I was really blown away by that. And a couple of them, they had some Photoshop, or actually I think they were using Adobe Illustrator in order to create their brochures. And these look like decent brochures. Nothing that you would expect was done by a high school kid.
That's fantastic. The tools that are available now, it just kind of blows you away. Stepping back just a little bit, looking at like showing some of the gaming videos to the youngsters and actually seeing how to or have an end product when you're working on something as opposed to doing something with code only. You don't really get to see the end product as you're building it as easily as you can now. So when you have freshmen building web pages and pulling the pieces together, it kind of helps make the idea for whatever the project is evolve a lot better over time. Instead of getting to a phase, looking back on it, making some adjustments, you can kind of just go with the flow, collect information, gather. I don't know specifically what the product was, but having a web page today for nearly anything is it's so simple, it's so beneficial. That's very impressive.
Yeah. Well, in these projects at the high school, all of them were related to like a big epic change. So transgenders, bathroom issues, body image issues was another one. There was one team or one group that was doing the gender age or the gender pay gap. in the workforce. So these were really big issues for high school kids. And like I said, a lot of them, you know, they understood how social media worked. They understood how they could get their message out there. They understood what it is that they wanted to change and how they wanted to change that. And they went ahead and took the initiative to go ahead and build things like a web page. Some of them had Facebook pages, and they said, yeah, hey, go like our Facebook page. So that's kind of what we're seeing now in our schools when it comes to how do we integrate current modern technology into the curriculum. Now, this high school is part of the New Tech Network, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about that during the podcast as well. My kids both go there, and it's a project-based learning school. And so instead of having your traditional teacher explain something on the whiteboard or whatever it is and read a book or read a chapter and then do the work on your own, this has changed it completely. Everything is done in teams. All the kids work is on projects as part of a 2-to-4-person team, and then they're graded on that. So they're forced to get in and learn those skills of how do you interact with a group as opposed to do things individually. So I'm not surprised that these kids took that initiative to go and expand out and do a video, even when they didn't need to do a video.
Yeah, so that's a really good point. So if we're talking late middle school, early high school, and these kids and students, they're not necessarily in that exact same situation, what should kids in other high schools really be doing to get started or to kind of go in that direction if that's something that they're interested in?
Yeah, well, it does depend a lot on what's available. And of course, if the school itself has some programs, I think those are the best way to go. But if they don't, I mean, there's all kinds of resources online. And I know I've kicked kids over to that want to learn programming over to things like Code Academy all the time. I think Code Academy does a really good job to get things going and get you some of those initial basic understandings of code, how variables work, how conditional statements work, things like that. And I don't think you can start that at middle school age for sure. I know my kids, as they were going through middle school, they were doing, I think it was code.org was the one that the school was recommending that they use. And it just gives them that base understanding. And a lot of times they can do it without any guidance, without any direction. It's all self-contained learning. So I do think that if they want to learn, obviously they can figure it out online. But having somebody to help them walk through it, I think is really important.
So maybe it's been a while since I've been in high school. We got some educators that probably want to get more tech involved, but aren't necessarily there or believe that they're the most qualified to begin teaching students at that level. Like, are these resources the same resources that the students could use to learn? Are they the same resources that maybe educators and parents could use to help get their kids into the groove of programming and development?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And as somebody that is passionate about education, I have gone through a lot of these courses, both the code.org. I've spent a lot of time with the lynda.com curriculums. I've looked into the Code Academy, and I've kind of jumped around at different courses that they offer. These are really high quality courses. If you had no understanding of computer science and programming, these are great ways to get started. And of course, it doesn't matter if you're a high school kid or a middle school or elementary school or a parent or a teacher. I think it's very applicable for anybody to go through. I think it'd be great if the parents would take a little bit more initiative too and maybe go through it with their kids so that they can kind of learn together. But it does come down to what the kids want to learn and what their motive of learning is. For example, if on all these platforms that I mentioned, they're going to be back to that writing code. It's going to be a Python. It's going to be JavaScript. It's going to be HTML. And sometimes that's not very gratifying for a kid. If you think about, okay, I'm going to create a really cool web page. Well, there's only so many things that you can do with HTML, and you don't get that same feedback as if you instead maybe you were doing something with, hey, I'm going to build a video game and I'm going to create some interactivity with a higher level platform. You know, Scratch is a great one that the kids use in schools. And it's completely free. We use Construct 2 as part of our gaming boot camps. And that's just a great platform. And you get that instant feedback. You get that it just did something without having to spend days learning how to create a variable and how to store things into a variable and how to use a conditional statement.
Right. That's an excellent point. That instant feedback is sort of what I was alluding to earlier. It takes, when you're doing kind of just command line or HTML coding in a window, it takes a little while to really get to a point to see a result of something. And when you look at where you're starting, especially if you're looking at Code Academy or Udemy or something, and you know that you want to build a web page, and you're trying to get to an endpoint or at least start seeing something, right, it can be pretty intimidating just to start, because it takes so long to just get the basic skeleton framework, wireframe of your website up and going, or whatever project mm-hmm. that you're working on. So that's a very great point. Some of these tools that you're using, you mentioned Construct or Construct 2, they give you that kind of that canvas to work on, and you can immediately start seeing things yeah. move within a few clicks, a few configurations. And that takes the intimidation out of it and starts making it fun right away. I can see how you get sucked into it as a student really quickly.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not saying Construct 2 is the only option. There's all kinds of other, I don't know if you even want to call them 4GL or 3GL languages that allow you to build things quickly and have a lot more drag and drop. And these are all more event-driven platforms. So instead of having to put the code in to say, you know, I want this to happen, as part of an event-driven platform, you can just say, well, when that thing happens, just do this. And it just makes the comprehension for younger kids a lot better. I know when I was learning to program, there was no such thing. And it was, you know, the best you could do would be to print your name on the screen a million times and have it scroll. And that was the kind of the feedback that you had. But we've just got so many tools available now today. You know, the interesting thing that I was thinking about throughout the week was, you know, when should we be learning or teaching kids about programming and some of these concepts. And I know, you know, as part of the, there's all kinds of tools out there for really, really, really young kids. I know there's all kinds of kind of even preschool type toys where you can just, in a way, program them into, you know, go straight, turn left, go turn right, you know, things like that. And I think that starts to build a little bit of that logic that kids need in a very, very early age. I know, Rush, you've got some, or your kid's much, much younger than mine. Do you guys do a lot of those types of toys?
We're not quite there yet. I had to pull myself back this Christmas season from actually buying one of those specials. One of the, I forget the name of it, but you lay a big mat down on the ground. It's about a 8-inch by 8-inch by 8-inch cube block. Mm-hmm. And you just got a couple arrows on it. You put the pegs in and you try to get it from point A to point B on the big mat. And I wanted it for myself, but I just, yep. My son's not quite 2.5 yet. I think it'd be a little early for him, but you could tell you try to do things to let the logic start kicking in and see how things work. So I look forward to using those types of tools and games to help him learn in the near future.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many things for that. I would say, you know, under 5 or 6, you know, before they go to school. And there's all kinds of interesting, just big giant toys that have some type of a logic built in. And they're fun to use. And I even get a kick out of them when I get a chance to play with them. I think they are a great way to get kids started. And then I think you get into the more elementary school, and that's where we teach one of our code clubs, and that's going to be 4th and 5th grade. So that's still pretty, pretty young. We haven't done anything younger than that, but I know there's some other schools in the area that have started to integrate more of the Scratch platform, which is an MIT program. If you're not familiar with Scratch, it's got their icon's like a little yellow cat. Scratch, and it's very much where you drag little kind of blocks and groups of things around, and then you can run it. And however you've snapped those blocks together is how it executes. And so you can kind of create a little loop, or you could do a little condition, you know, when this counter gets to 10, do this type of a thing. And it helps kids start to kind of relate with how the objects interact with other things. And you can build some really interesting games. The other cool thing I like about Scratch is they've got a lot of extensions, so you can interact with the real world through things like a camera or a microphone or even a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino. And so now you can start to teach kids how the real world can then interact with programs. And that's something that's relatively new. If you think back, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago, it was so hard to try to create that bridge between the real world and the software world.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I haven't really crossed into very much yet. And you can tell that that's really picking up with smart devices. I mean, the ability to really kind of broaden your horizons and use any tool, any device, make anything out of anything. That's becoming a very interesting aspect of the technology world today. You got the Internet of Things devices. I mean, that having the ability to interface and access these devices right now is pretty much, I mean, it's a great time to get into it. It's a great time to start learning this stuff.
It is. And we both are, you know, in the Sioux Falls area. And so we've got access, all of our schools, I think across the entire state of South Dakota. I think it's high school and beyond, all of high school. I think they have Chromebooks. And I know they started introducing, at least when my kids were in middle school, in sixth grade, they would get a Chromebook, but they wouldn't take it home. They would leave it at school. And then by the time they were in eighth grade, they essentially took it home as well. So if you think about, and as you mentioned, with the phone apps now, Chrome obviously is through the Android. So there's a huge amount of overlap between the programs that are available and what kids can do with them. And it may not be the perfect toy or the perfect device. I mean, I know we've run into a lot of limitations with Chromebooks, but it does start to get them in the hands of kids a lot earlier to start to explore. And the phone app development has really helped push that down to the laptops through those Chromebooks. And I do think it's a really great way to get more and more kids that would not have access to a laptop to be able to hopefully start to explore a little bit more.
Yeah, the Chromebooks are a fantastic tool. It reduces the barrier of entry for kids to get the hardware and resources they need to start building these tools. Just recently, I think within the last couple of days, Google announced a new cross-platform development IDE for doing mobile app development for both iOS and Android. So that's a prime example right there. You know they're not going to really be concerned with the level of what the hardware can do. If Google's building the IDE, they're going to make it so you can run it on their Chromebooks, which is fantastic. And with cloud, you can pretty much take any piece of hardware, even if it's 10 years old, and have some sort of cloud platform to build really high quality applications from. So from a cost standpoint, even it's fairly affordable, most of the time even free, to access these resources and get started. That's the important thing.
Yeah. And I know the schools around here, a lot of them have iPads too. And at the younger ages, that elementary school, early middle school, a lot of the things that they do is around the iPad. And the iPad has some interesting extensions as well, where you can start to interact with the real world. Of course, they've got the cameras. And I know one of the guys I work with is his kids in a different school district, but in the same general area. And they do a lot more with recording, like having the kids actually shoot video throughout the day. And they push those videos right straight out to the parents through an application. So the parents can start to get a little bit more of an insight as to the projects that the kids are working on. And I just think that's a nice way to just because we always run into a problem here with our gaming club and our gaming boot camp is I want those parents to be interactive, and I want to have them understand what we're doing and see that value. I don't want it just to be, hey, junior's gone for the day. That's awesome. I want them to know what it is that the kids are learning. And so I try to shoot a lot of video or do some Facebook lives, and then I always take pictures. And then a lot of times I'll send them out in the evening and just say, hey, here's some things that we learned throughout the day. But I think that's a great way to get the parents more involved as well. They start to see that their kids are doing things with technology. Now maybe they'll be a little bit more open.
Yeah, when you're a youngster, I mean, I speak from experience, when you start learning some of those techniques, or you did a new function and you got your application or your game to do something, you can get excited. You learn so much in a day, you get so overwhelmed. You come home from one of these boot camps and you're sitting at the table and you kind of forget about what you learned, or you don't tell everything about what you learned. That gives an opportunity for the parents to be able to ask questions and engage the child on things that the child just basically forgot to mention that he learned throughout the day too. So that's great. Including those videos.
Well, my kids never, ever, ever tell me what they do during the day. So I wish that our school had some of that instant feedback. My kids are both in high school now, but I still would like to know what it is that they're doing.
Yeah, I could see that. I can see that. Make sure.
But yeah, and then as we get out of the middle school where they're starting to get more engaged with those Chromebooks, and then all through high school, the kids will have a Chromebook throughout the school year. They don't get to keep it during the summer, but I don't know, maybe they'll allow that here in the future as well. But they do have that Chromebook that's just always available, and hopefully they've got internet at home so they can continue to do work. And I know with our school system here, all the homework and the classwork is available through a portal, through a special website that the kids have access to. And they have access to it at school as well as at home. So everything that my kids do has been moved to online through this portal. And it's kind of like, if you're in the business world, kind of like a CMS type system where there's a lot more interactivity. They can message their groups. They can message the teachers. They can see homework that is due. They can put the homework right into it. And they do get real-time feedback on their grades as well. But I do think a lot of that technology is just getting them kicked back out, getting them excited about how to do these things in the real world, in the workforce. I know when I was in high school, You literally get your grades like twice during an entire semester. At the beginning or halfway through, they'd say, here's where you're at. And then you'd kind of have to wait till the end to see where you ended. But now the kids get instant feedback. I mean, throughout the day, you can watch and see where their grades are at as they've turned in homework.
Yeah, that's the constant feedback and the ability to just explore. And like you mentioned, maybe during the at least the school season, bring the devices home, right. Have internet connection. I mean, you make a little bit of progress and it just kind of it's like building a habit. You kind of can't get enough of it and you want to explore and go research other things. The what ifs? What if I did this? What if right. I could do this type of thing? So getting that constant feedback from teachers and parents and then just having that inquisitive mind to go out and research things with some of these resources that are available. It's a fantastic world that we're in right now with all this technology and free knowledge right. at our fingertips. It's fantastic.
It is. And most of the programs, actually, I think everything we've talked about today is completely free, or at least there's a free option. Scratch is free. Code.org is free. Code Academy is free. Scratch Construct 2, both of those have free versions that you can use. It is amazing if people just want to go learn. There's really no limit on what they can figure out. But the other thing that I was thinking today, too, as I was watching these high school kids present, was what should we be teaching these high school kids from a technology skills? Now, my background and yours as well is much more around programming and direct IT. How do we – very deep stuff, I would say. This isn't your average person isn't going to understand a lot of what we do during the day. But what is it that we should be teaching these high school kids? I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that, Russ? I know your son's quite a bit of quite a ways away from being in high school.
You know, before you even break into the programming aspect of it, it's kind of like I still deal with this every day, but it's systems thinking. It's that kind of the pseudo algorithm, the pseudo aspect of it. Like, okay, if this happens right. in a very vague state, what could possibly be the result? And you could write that down without even knowing a single language. Like, if I do this, what do I want the result to be, or what could the results be? That the stepping out a process in multiple areas and basically drawing anymore some people call it a mind map, but just a reverse tree of different processes. And that's the whole thing, is just understanding processes and loops, like looping processes over and over and scheduling and things like that. Just systems thinking. That's a great place to really start. And you mentioned earlier getting the logic thinking, like what happens if I click this button? Building that inquisitive mind, that's really what starts it. Because being in IT, doing customer support, you can't really get away from customer support one way or another when you're in IT, but you can't really teach troubleshooting. You teach the way to really ask yourself the right questions, and then over time, you get really good at troubleshooting. And when you get really good at troubleshooting, you get really good at asking better questions and finding better answers. And that's where you need to be able to do that when you get really deep into complex development.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we didn't set out to talk about logic, but clearly up and down that chain between the preschool and elementary, middle, high school, I mean, that is the key common denominator. It's being able to figure things out. What's the outcome if you try something and do something? And I do think a lot of obviously all of programming is directly related to logic, but I think there's a lot of non-programming ways to bring in some of that logic as well.
You know, one of the main things when you really get down into it is just trying things and not worrying about failing. The best thing about the best thing about letters and numbers on your screen is you don't really have to worry about completely breaking something most of the time. Yeah. So the more you break, the more you learn and the better you get. So that's the key thing, is not being afraid of failure. And I feel like we're doing pretty good about that from a teaching standpoint right now anyway, but celebrating failures, learning from them, that's another piece of what should be focused on before and as you're getting into programming.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And there's two ways to look at that. I mean, yes, from a success failure standpoint, I think the schools are, and everybody, our society as a whole has very much embraced that. The one area that I do think there's some room for improvement, though, is just letting kids explore. I know I see this, too, because when we try to do education events, we try to separate it from the school because I don't want them to have that same, I'm in school, I have to fit this very rigid model. I have to wait for somebody to tell me to push the button or wait for somebody to start. And all the things that we do, I want those kids to explore. And if they ask me, hey, what does this feature do? Or what does this button do? Or what is this behavior do? And if we haven't covered it yet, I always say, I don't know, push it and find out. Like you said, nothing bad is going to happen in general. I can usually roll things back out. But I get all kinds of stories about how quickly those kids can get down a rabbit hole and it create a new interesting logic problem for me. But I do want to see more kids just push those buttons and explore and just figure out what it is that's going to happen when, you know, the logic happens. When you push that button, you run that feature.
Yeah, so there, you're not necessarily, I mean, you have an agenda or an itinerary or a syllabus, right, per se, but I mean, if somebody's sitting there in your class and they're kind of not necessarily paying attention, a little overexcited, and start going out ahead without following the process on the paper, the documentation, there's no reason to get bent out of shape about that. Yeah. You can always come back or start fresh, clean slate. But yeah, giving the kids the ability to explore and kind of go out on their own, that's the main thing, because that's how they build those learning and logic processes for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm sure we'll talk about this here on the podcast as well. But just, you know, we've always been very encouraging of the kids to go explore and build things or take things apart. And a lot of the activities that we host are either around creating something new or destroying something that already exists.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm seeing a theme here overall. Yeah. From where should you start, or when should kids start learning to program? I mean, for the most part, it's pretty much as soon as they show any interest in it whatsoever, there's something out there that you could use to get them started or to give them something to it. And basically it's really fun. It's inexpensive, if not totally free, and there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, for the most part. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I think, you know, maybe we can cover a few takeaways for the audience here today. And I mean, you mentioned some really, really good ones there as well. But I think another one that I'd like to just throw out there is that, you know, if any parents are unsure how to get started, it's not that hard. I mean, we mentioned a number of resources today. I'm sure, Raj, you'll put them on the website at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I will definitely do that.
But just get in there and take some of these courses. I mean, I would highly recommend, if you want to learn to program, to stick around either code.org or the Code Academy. If you want to spend a little bit of money and get lynda.com, which I do know, if you live in our general area here, if you have a library card through their digital services, you can actually use lynda.com at no cost, which I think normally is around $15 a month if you just subscribe to it. So that's a huge value that anybody in Sioux Falls could take advantage of. But Lynda goes beyond just programming. If kids want to learn how to shoot a video or how to edit a video, how to use Photoshop, they've got all kinds of courses for those. Some of them are just 5 or 10, 20 minutes long. Others might spread out over many, many, many hours, depending on the depth of the topic. But I think those are some great ways for both kids to learn and parents to learn as well. There's just so many free resources online, and I would start there. I know even in our area, we've got some in-person options as well, but I would start with some of the digital ones.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the main things that I personally always get asked, or always get told necessarily, not necessarily asked, is like, how do you know where to start? Like, I don't know where to start. And for the most part, you really just kind of... I always say the best place to start is find something that you enjoy or you really admire and make it the way you want to make it. Like, there's no good place to start. You just have to kind of pick at something, and that's like, copy it. Basically take a game that already exists, Flappy Bird or something out there, and just copy it. Right. And start there. And the next thing you know, it spirals and snowballs completely out of control, and you're building the next, high-class computer video game.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think I'd go even one step further on there, and that is to have a goal. You know, set yourself a goal. I want to learn how to, like you said, build Flappy Birds. Go build Flappy Birds. I mean, I think that's a great way to do it. If you just set yourself as a general goal, like I'd learn to program, or I'm going to take a Udemy class, you may just end up going in circles and never completing it because there was no outcome. I know for myself, when I want to learn something new, I usually have a project in mind, and I really try to get every, and I'm famous for starting projects that I don't finish, but I do try to finish those projects, especially if it's the first time I've ever learned that platform.
Yep.
Well, excellent.
For sure.
Well, Well, I think that's great for tonight. Ross, is there anything else you want to add on that topic? I know we're going to be covering bits and pieces of it here moving forward as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We could talk all the time, or we could talk a whole nother episode about the projects we've either both started and haven't completed, but we could save that for another time for sure.
We could talk for hours about the projects I've started and haven't finished in the last week.
I'll look forward to it.
Well, excellent. Well, thanks for joining us today. If you haven't left a review on Apple, which I'm guessing you haven't since this is the first episode, we'd love to have you give us a big 5 stars. You know, as always, you can join the conversation on our Facebook page, which is Go Hack Something. Just type that into the search. You may have to do like a @GoHackSomething, depending on how picky Facebook is. And you can also find the link on our website, which is GoHackSomething.com. Thanks, Ross. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it.